Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
On day one, we will begin giving you a government that's open, accountability, and ready to get taxes and spending under control. Day one will mark the beginning of the end of the vicious property tax cycle, driving so many families and businesses away from this state.
And day one is now. That was Eliot Spitzer after an election victory. And this is live special coverage of Eliot Spitzer's inaugural address on WNYC, FM and AM New York, and WNYC.org. I'm Brian Lehrer in New York with WNYC political reporter Elaine Rivera at the inauguration in Albany. This speech was originally set for noon, but was delayed for an hour by Albany weather conditions, or at least the anticipation of Albany weather conditions. I think it actually may be a little nicer up there today than it is here. But joining us now to preview the speech are New York Post state editor Fred Dicker in Albany and Baruch College public affairs professor Doug Muzio. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Brian. Thank you very much.
Fred, how is the weather in Albany now?
It's getting nicer. The sun was actually out for a while when Governor Spitzer said the
get used to it.
Word. Right, you got to get used to it. Was heading for the Capitol after he signed a set of executive orders. Right now, there's no rain, and it's very mild, which is the nicest part of it, because even if there was some rain, 45, 46 degrees is certainly tolerable.
And before we stop saying Governor Pataki, you report in the Post today that Governor Spitzer has reluctantly agreed to Governor Pataki's request for a security detail that'll cost the taxpayers at least $20,000 a week, you estimate, and that no ex-governor has ever had before. What exactly did Mr. Pataki ask for?
Well, he asked for a continuation of the kind of intense security that he's had really ever since he was governor. I was just talking to Attorney General Andrew Cuomo, and he was saying his dad, Mario Cuomo, who certainly was the target of many threats, never had anything like this. He was saying that it's appropriate that Spitzer has asked the Ethics Commission, as well as says he'll be asking an independent police agency or consultant to come in on this. But this was a last-minute request by Pataki to the new governor. It looks like the new governor didn't want to say no. There are many people here who believe that Governor Pataki became so enamored with having a phalanx of security wherever he went that he just didn't want to give it up, and they're questioning the legitimacy of it.
Gee, doesn't Alan Hevesy have an out-of-work chauffeur who is providing security for somebody?
Indeed. Eliot Spitzer himself, privately with people, invoked the Hevesy issue, wondering whether or not it would be legal to provide this kind of protection for a man who, after all, is now a private citizen under the law. I mean, George Pataki can call the cops if there's a threat to him. His local police force would protect him. So what entitles him to have private security? I mean, obviously, if there's an imminent threat, I don't think anybody's going to deny it to him. But that apparently is what at least some effort's going to be made to determine to see if there really is a threat there.
And does it have anything to do with his presumed run for the presidency?
Doesn't appear to. I mean, I think most people think it has everything to do with his ego and his liking to have these people around him who drive him all over the place, who carry his coat and give him assistance, which he's been used to. I mean, that's one of the things that's so seductive for politicians. They get to love the way of life.
So, Doug Muzio, here we are on day one. What can we expect from Eliot Spitzer today?
Well, not the soaring rhetoric of the Mario Cuomo nor the pedestrian, but still strident Pataki in 94. I think you're going to have measured, he's establishing the narrative here. He's going to start framing the story, and the story is going to be open, clean, honest government, active government, not necessarily in the liberal sense, but in the terms of protecting the citizenry. So he's gonna articulate a number of both conservative and liberal themes. And then on the State of the State message on Wednesday, and then really in the budget at the end of the month, you really understand what his priorities are going
to
be.
And one of the excerpts from the speech that they have pre-released to the media says, "What is needed now more than ever is a politics that binds us together, a politics that looks to the future, a politics that asks not what is in it for me, but always what is in it for us."
Yeah, you know,
shades of John Kennedy,
of New York, of Cuomo and JFK's 1961 inaugural speech. So there are echoes there. The Spitzer administration is going to be very sensitive to symbolism, that actions are not only, you know, symbolic actions, but they have a substance of their own. And this is symbol creating.
Fred, also taking the oath of office today is Attorney General Andrew Cuomo, who you mentioned a minute ago. And before we go to Spitzer's speech and then dwell very much on Spitzer, Cuomo and Lieutenant Governor David Patterson are also getting sworn in today. Patterson, I believe, is both the first African-American lieutenant governor and the first legally blind lieutenant governor. He was the Senate minority leader. And as for Cuomo, I noticed that his appointments to his cabinet drew a positive editorial in the Daily News on Saturday. It said they were concerned he would play politics with his appointments, but there isn't a crony in the bunch. And they singled out Mylon Dennerstein as Executive Deputy Attorney General for Social Justice and Eric Korngold as Executive Deputy Attorney General for Economic Justice. And I'm interested in those titles, Fred. Have there always been Deputy Attorneys General for Social and Economic Justice?
There have not been. They're new titles. They do smack of a kind of liberal agenda, to say the least. Andrew Cuomo has said that those titles basically reflect the same kind of responsibilities that Elliot Spitzer had given deputy attorney generals, who had different titles, but they are eyebrow-raising, and I think they do suggest that Andrew Cuomo is beholden and is trying to show his gratitude to certain people who were his early supporters. You remember Andrew Cuomo, after he took on Carl McCall 4 years ago and lost, was seen by many as having alienated black and Latino Democrats, because many of them had been behind Carl McCall. So he went out of his way in this election cycle, and he was remarkably successful in lining up a lot of minority support in the intense primary that he had with Mark Green and others. And I think this is a way of at least symbolically showing that he is sensitive to the concerns of many of his backers.
And it reflects how he ran the campaign. I noticed on his website and in his campaign rhetoric, running against Jeanine Pirro, that he was emphasizing social and economic justice as what he would do as attorney general, while she was emphasizing crime prevention, like child sex abuse prevention and things like that. And there was very different, and one could say, liberal versus conservative cast to that campaign. And now we'll see if he governs as he ran. And
Doug, whatever those terms mean, I mean, what does a New York attorney general have to do with social justice? I mean, you know, these are kind of catchphrases, some might even say cliches, but we will see. But what is social justice when it comes to the laws of New York? I mean, laws are supposed to be applied equally, and if there are violators of the laws and the attorney general happens to have jurisdiction, our attorney general doesn't have all that much jurisdiction, then they're supposed to make sure the laws are enforced.
But it's an office where you can largely pick your own battles and set your own agenda, as I think Elliot Spitzer did, and so you can focus on certain kinds of things that come from a social justice, economic justice framework, or certain kinds of things that focus on a public safety framework, or things like that, don't you think?
Well, yes, I agree totally, Brian.
Hang on, let Fred finish, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, the Attorney General of New York is not, it's often misrepresented as the chief law enforcement officer of New York. It is not. It is the chief legal officer of New York with certain limited areas of criminal and law enforcement responsibility. To the extent that the governor emphasizes one over another, and the Attorney General, and an Attorney General can do that, be it Wall Street law under the Martin Act or the Civil Rights law, then, in fact, of course, they set their own agenda.
Doug, go ahead.
No, I was going to say much the same thing, that what you have is the, again, you're talking about image. So as Fred suggests, he is paying off his liberal constellation of supporters, but at the same time, it does reflect an ideological orientation, and it does, and it can impact on the way the various traditional bureaus function, in both in taking cases, prioritizing cases, etc. So I think it does have a practical import, or at least can.
Yes.
And Doug, getting back to the Lieutenant Governor, David Paterson, he's all those things I mentioned before. He's also from Harlem. He definitely helped the ticket. What role do you see for him in the administration?
It'd be the role that Spitzer gives to him. I mean, the clearly, like the vice president, and even worse in New York, the lieutenant governor has not done much. There are areas of policy. I mean, the Al Gore, Bill Clinton model. You could put Paterson in charge of certain, you know, looking over certain policy areas, almost like a deputy mayor with some kind of portfolio. I mean, there are any number of models, but you will see Spitzer experimenting with these various management models, because a lot of this has to do with management. I mean, doing in New York what Bloomberg has begun to do in New York City.
This is live coverage of Elliot Spitzer's inaugural address. They're having the swearing in. There's a color guard right now. It looks like Pledge of Allegiance and Star Spangled Banner about to happen, and a convocation, and then we're probably about 5 or 10 minutes away from the actual inaugural address as we await it with Doug Muzio, public affairs professor at Baruch College, and Fred Dicker, New York Post state editor in Albany. Fred, anything on the lieutenant governor?
Well, it's been, as Doug suggested, it hasn't been an office with a happy history. You'd probably have to go back maybe to Malcolm Wilson, who was the lieutenant governor under Nelson Rockefeller, to find someone who was thought of as a good lieutenant governor. And he was thought of as good in part because he had his own private law practice, and he was in his law office most of the time. And then he handled some political matters for the then governor. Many governors, lieutenant governors, have plotted against the governors. Look at Mario Cuomo and a few other very unhappy situations. I was thinking of...
I'm trying to remember his name, too.
No, I was...
Del Bello?
Who are you thinking of?
Alfred Del Bello?
Well, Al Del Bello came in and decided this wasn't for him and went out, but Marianne Krupsack was an early plotter, too. She was Hugh Carey's first lieutenant governor and tried to run against him. And, of course, Betsy McCoy Ross, or Betsy McCoy, who was George Pataki's first lieutenant governor, ran against him, or sought to initially, and then switched parties. So it's been a very unhappy office for the people in it. It's been unsatisfying for the people of New York who've watched it. And the big question, of course, now is, will this one with David Paterson be something different? They've started out very well. Elliot Spitzer showing a lot of respect to David Paterson. But already, and it's only day one, there are some signs of strain.
Really? Like what?
Well, you want me to give away tomorrow's story?
No, absolutely.
Not tomorrow, but there are indications that people around the David Paterson don't believe that the people around Elliot Spitzer have given him the kind of respect consulted him on all the things he should be consulted on. It's the nature of it. I mean, a governor has a number of top aides. If the lieutenant governor is to be effective, he needs to have a carved-out portfolio that he really controls, and the governor's top aides don't want to cede that to anybody else. So there's an inherent conflict that's always there.
Though I don't expect to see David Paterson standing behind Spitzer during the entire inaugural address,
unless he's authorized,
as Betsy McCoy Ross did behind Pataki's first inaugural, to much controversy, staying in the TV shot the whole time. You know, Doug, I was reading that Mrs. Spitzer, her first name is Silda, S-I-L-D-A, will have an unpaid policy role in the administration and an office near the governor's in the Capitol. Are you familiar with her or her areas of policy expertise? I do know that she, they met at Harvard Law School, where they both attended at the same time. So, I don't know, shades of Bill and Hillary?
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's not necessarily a bad model. It depends what she brings to the discussion. And I don't know, the cliche is right, I think, oftentimes. Two heads are better than one. And clearly, the way she plays that role will be, you know, important and instructive. But I think that's a plus.
A twofer, Fred, as President Clinton used to put it.
Absolutely, and it's a dramatic contrast to Libby Pataki, the last governor's wife, who was notorious for taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from charities, wheelchair charity, breast cancer charity. as some kind of consultant that she would never explain to us. Here's Silda Wall, who's going to be doing a lot of volunteer activity. She cares a lot about children, by all accounts, and she's a very smart, able individual who's very comfortable in social settings. The fact that she's even going to have an office at the Capitol, and that Governor Spitzer said he's going to spend time at the Capitol here, is a nice change from the previous governor, who was rarely at the state Capitol.
And at the state Capitol right now, actually at, I guess it's West Capitol Park. Is that what it's called, Fred?
Yes, between the Capitol and the Alfred E. Smith State Office Building.
The inaugural ceremony taking place, the American flag, New York State flag, a couple of other flags flying there right now, and it looks like perhaps a religious invocation that's taking place right at this moment, and then Eliot Spitzer will take the oath of office, the ceremonial one. He took the actual one, making him the official governor as of last midnight, and then we will hear the inaugural address just a few minutes away. They're actually singing the national anthem right now, though I'm not going to stand since I'm not there and I can't hear it, and then I'd be too far away from the microphone. Doug Muzio, let me ask you about some of Spitzer's cabinet appointments. He has talked about looking past partisanship and looking past who's in line for patronage or political favors, which he says would distinguish him from Governor Pataki. Has he done it?
For the most part, it seems so. I'm just now looking at a list. These are his associates from his school, from the Attorney General's office. You would expect that, but they seem to be perfectly suited for the positions they've been appointed. And in fact, we can expect good things. He names Tom DiNapoli head of Homeland Security, crossing, you know, the partisan divide.
It was Michael Balboni. Balboni.
Michael Balboni.
DiNapoli is still waiting for his job.
Right, that's true. Thanks, Fred.
Well, DiNapoli is a leading Democratic member of the Assembly from Long Island, and I had heard that he was offered one job that he wasn't interested in, and we'll see if he actually winds up in the cabinet. I know he's close to Spitzer, but let's talk about the Balboni appointment, Doug. This has been getting some attention because he is a Republican state senator from Long Island
a Democratic Party registration advantage. It's changing, yes, state Senate control.
So it gives the Democrats a chance to take his Senate seat in a special election, as well as it crosses party lines. So how do we separate, you know, the bipartisan cabinet appointment, feel good, we're all in this together part of this, from the crafty partisan Senate poaching in that move?
Brilliant. If you can construct those situations frequently enough, you're elected, reelected, and you move on to higher office. I think, though, it seems to me that it was driven less by the crafty strategy and more by the reaching across and bipartisanship, but clearly there were elements of both.
Fred?
Well, I was going to say you don't separate the two. It was a very savvy move. It's really infuriated Senate Republicans. And Spitzer gets the plus that this guy, Mike Balboni, even though he's not known to the public, is well known around state government as a recognized expert on homeland security issues. So it's, on its face, it's a legitimate appointment. It looks like bipartisanship or nonpartisanship, and it has the added benefit of being a very clever and potentially devastating move to benefit the Democrats in the Senate.
So while trying to get credit from the public for reaching across party lines, he also infuriated the Republican leaders.
No question.
Speaking of Republican leaders, maybe we should talk a little bit about Joe Bruno. And, Fred, he seems to be under increasing pressure over his relationship with a particular company.
Political death watch.
You going to go that far?
Well, I mean, that's the attitude here at the Capitol. I mean, people are waiting for the other shoe to drop, basically, and have him get indicted. It's either going to be that or it'll be cleared. But when you're facing a possible, you know, federal charge, it's a sort of a political death watch. If a charge like that is brought, he's done.
Can you explain the charge?
Well, we don't know if there's going to be a charge, first of all. But the evidence that's out there, both Joe Bruno's own admissions and other disclosures, indicate that the federal government, the FBI, and a federal grand jury are looking into the circumstances under which Bruno runs a private consulting business out of his home, which has done business with a guy named Jared Abruzzese, who's from around here, who also has had business interests in front of the state including in ownership of a portion of a company to which Joe Bruno has steered about $500,000 in state money through a so-called member item. Now, Bruno is allowed to have outside business interests, just like other lawmakers can. The job is defined as a part-time job under the law, and he's allowed to do business with some people who do business with the state. However, if the feds can show a direct linkage with Bruno supplying state money to an individual or to an individual's company as a quid pro quo to him getting payments as a business consultant, I think that's what's known as public corruption, and he'd be in big trouble.
And Spitzer would have even more power than he's already going to have coming in.
Well, most likely. I mean, it would damage Bruno if he was indicted and convicted. He'd have to he'd be out of office, and if he was indicted, he might have to just step down as majority leader. And it puts a cast of scandal, understandably, over the Republicans who narrowly now control the Senate.
They've just sworn in Andrew Cuomo officially as the Attorney General of the state of New York, replacing Eliot Spitzer. Spitzer's oath coming up, and maybe David Patterson's oath. I guess David Patterson's oath coming up first, and then Spitzer's, and then we'll have the inaugural address, which we will carry live. State editor of the New York Post, Fred Dicker, with us, and Baruch College Public Affairs Professor Doug Muzio until then. And, Doug, one of the short excerpts from the speech that they've released in advance to the media refers to making cuts in the health care we can't afford. Let's see if I can find. Here it is. We've seen it in the burdensome property taxes and the health care we can't afford, in the jobs that have disappeared from our upstate cities and the schools that keep failing our children, in a government that works for those who hold office, not those who put them there, all referring to the challenge that he faces. But I'm struck by this phrase, the health care we can't afford, because he has also promised universal health care in the state and to go right about trying to cover at least half the people who are uninsured. Are those things mutually exclusive?
No, I think in fact they're reinforcing, because the health care that we can't afford is the health care of Medicaid fraud, overbilling, unnecessary facilities, maybe even excessive union contracts. So I don't think that they are at all mutually exclusive. And in fact, eliminating the abuses in one frees up the resources to do the other.
Fred, anything on that?
No, I agree. It's going to be a very heavy lift. I mean, to cut the healthcare spending, as we've already seen, means to take on some of the most influential forces in the state, the Hospital Workers Union, as well as the consortium of hospitals down in New York City, which have enormous support in the legislature. But Eliot Spitzer made that a centerpiece of his campaign, and I think he's got the momentum that should allow him to do it.
And Fred, I've been speculating that Governor Spitzer will seize the moment to stage a sister soldier moment sometime soon. That is, like President Clinton once upon a time, he will take the opportunity to talk back to a Democratic Party constituency to establish some bipartisan credibility. And Alan Chartok and Wayne Barrett both nominated Dennis Rivera from 1199 as a likely sister soldier when I mentioned this to them on the air. Does that sound likely to you, speaking of health care?
I think the expectation has not been that he would take on anybody from 1199, Dennis Rivera or anyone else, but that he would take on Shelley Silver, the Assembly Speaker. But the indications are that Silver is preemptively capitulating and is indicating that he'll do whatever the new governor wants, which is probably a very smart move for Sheldon Silver, who's no dummy, that's for sure. So I think you're right in anticipating something like that was probably being considered by Spitzer, but it may be unnecessary for him to do.
Silver capitulating preemptively on things like what?
He's even called a 2:30 press conference today to say how much he's going to be behind Eliot Spitzer. On health care, on ethics, I think you're going to see a cooperative Sheldon Silver, the likes of which George Pataki could have only dreamed of having.
Hey, one thing about Spitzer that I've been wondering, I mean about Silver, that I've been wondering the last few days, and Fred, with your contacts, maybe you know the answer.
Yeah.
There was so much anticipation about how he would vote finally, or have his appointee vote on the Atlantic Yards project, the Nets Arena and all of that in Brooklyn, with a lot of speculation that he would delay it so that Eliot Spitzer could then come in and, you know, use his clout to tweak it. But then he voted for it. So this has gone through now, unless it gets knocked down in court. And I was wondering if maybe Spitzer asked him to do that because it's such a pain in the neck that maybe Spitzer wanted this off his plate rather than on his plate.
It wasn't seen here as nearly as controversial as the West Side Stadium and some other projects have been, and it didn't have the element of bitterness between Pataki and Silver that the Moynihan Station had. So I don't know that that was the case. Silver claimed that he was supportive of this project all along and had an enormous amount of support, and I didn't have the sense that he was kind of getting it out of the way so Elliott Spitzer wouldn't have to deal with a tough one.
And what about Moynihan Station? Why has Sheldon Silver stopped that, which almost everybody that I know of in policy circles, you know, thinks is a great idea to expand Penn Station?
Well, he says he hasn't stopped it. He said he just didn't like what was submitted to him by Governor Pataki. The level of bitterness between Silver and Pataki is difficult to overestimate. Charlie Gargano, who is Pataki's representative on a lot of this, was described as, what, a crook by Shelley Silver?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they wanted nothing to do with each other. I think Silver just reached a point where he had no faith in Pataki and vice versa, and Silver had the upper hand, saying, let's just leave this for the new governor.
Doug Muzio, we now see on our monitor here Elliott Spitzer about to take the oath of office. He has raised his right hand, and so as soon as that is done, he is going to stay at the podium after he's sworn in by Judge Robert Sweet and deliver his inaugural address, which we will carry here live. What are you expecting to hear?
Well, I think you're going to hear, you know, reforming state government. You're going to hear reforming health care. You're going to hear overhauling school finance. You're going to hear property taxes. You're going to hear reviving the upstate economy. You're going to hear management honesty, a sense of movement and activity, philosophy, you know, government, you know, government.
And let me jump in
what it does and doing it
we
well.
We have just lip read him saying, so help me God, so the oath of office is over. Cannons are being fired right now. He has kissed his wife and soon-to-be colleague in the Capitol. So, Doug Muzio, thank you very much for joining us. We'll talk to you again after the speech. Fred Dicker, state editor for the New York Post, thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.